Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. I personally take Super Beets when I need a power boost. It's my favorite product. Super Beets gives me energy and stamina for my busy day. Right now, get a one-month supply free with your first order. Check out the Dr. Hoffman special right now at IntelligentBeets.com. That's IntelligentBeets.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and once again, it's time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, an opportunity for you to pose questions to us via email. We will read the questions, and then we will do our due diligence to answer the questions. For those of you who are new to Intelligent Medicine, we have a weekly feature where I'm joined by Hoffman Center Nutritionist. We work together on a daily basis. Layla Mutin, who is a registered dietitian, and she also has earned a master's degree in the field of nutrition. She has experience working at the esteemed Atkins Center prior to joining the Hoffman Center. What is it now, 10 years? 10 years, over 10 years, right? We had our 10th anniversary?
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Yes, it's my 10th anniversary here with you, Dr. Hoffman, at the Hoffman Center. Yep.
Time flies when you're having fun. Okay.
Yeah.
So before we get to questions, I want to share with you this. This is a press release from last week, which is from an outfit called orthomolecular.org, which is a place that is in the tradition of Linus Pauling, who actually coined the term orthomolecular. Orthomolecular means an approach to health which is based on straightening out your molecules. Ortho means straight, molecule means molecule, and using natural interventions with vitamins and supplements to optimize a person's health. And their motto is therapeutic nutrition based on biochemical individuality, because it's different for everyone, different strokes for different folks.
Yeah.
And so the headline of their press release, by the way, I posted it on Facebook and Twitter, and it's gotten a lot of likes and it's gotten a lot of shares. Word's getting out. Headline, no deaths from vitamins, absolutely none. 31 years of supplement safety once again confirmed by America's largest database. This is the 31st annual report. Every year they're tasked with coming up with a report on, is there a problem with something. This is the American Association of Poison Control Centers. They recorded zero deaths from multiple vitamins. And in addition, there were no deaths whatsoever from vitamin A, niacin, vitamin B6, any other B vitamin, vitamin C, vitamin D, vitamin E, or any vitamin at all. So have you seen this on the evening news yet?
You know, I haven't, and we probably won't.
We absolutely won't, because if there was even like one death, it would be like a headline. But they estimate, it's kind of interesting here, 170 million individual doses per day. So 60 billion doses of vitamins annually. What are the chances that these things are so safe? And when we talk about vitamins, even when we talk about the food supply, how many people die of bad food in this country? You know, hundreds of people.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are dying a slow death, possibly hundreds of thousands or even millions of people are dying a slow death from the effects of foods. But compare this to drugs on a daily basis, even, you know, in a hospital, it's not uncommon for there to be, a death a week due to some complication of a medication that's given properly, taken medications with, unforeseen complications. You know, your skin peels off, you go into renal failure or cardiac arrhythmia or, whatever. So I just wanted to share that. And also with the perspective that there's a double standard when it comes to vitamins, because they're always pushing for more and more regulation about vitamins and supplements, and they're unsafe and dangerous, and we need more laws and we need more money sent to the Food and Drug Administration, and we need to have an approval process for vitamins that is akin to the approval process that we have for medications in this country, which would cost each company millions of dollars for each new supplement that they would introduce. and totally put a lid on supplement innovation and deprive Americans of the vast array of supplements they can choose from. Those are the facts.
You know, that's akin to the FDA taking away our food, which is our nutrition and contain our micronutrients. And where does it stop?
Well, to some extent they do, because in one controversial area where they do take away our food is with non-pasteurized milk. And a lot of people, dairy is controversial, I'll admit, but for some people, especially we recently interviewed Dr. Kayla Daniel of Weston A. Price.
Yes,
and
yes.
That organization is a big proponent of an ancestral diet, but they believe that a part of the ancestral diet is using unpasteurized dairy. They believe, and I believe, that maybe what's wrong with dairy is the pasteurization process denatures some of the beneficial substances that are in the dairy, and that it may render it more toxic, more dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, that's just a little bit of a double-edged sword. I am a big fan of raw dairy, but if I have a client who's pregnant,
pregnant,
I do issue the warning of, listen, I don't want you to get listeria. I mean, we can get listeria from other places, but most definitely from raw dairy. That can cause miscarriage.
Indeed.
So I want to make sure our clients have all the facts on all of that.
Exactly. There are places that have wonderful track records in this country that produce natural dairy products that are not contaminated.
Yes.
And so, this is a process that was initiated in it's called pasteurization. Louis Pasteur lived in France in the 1870s, and he came up with this idea that if you boiled milk, you could destroy the contaminants in milk, and so that's essentially what they do. They heat it, and they pasteurize it. They destroy the bugs. But in so doing, we may have altered milk to make it less nourishing and potentially more atherogenic to the arteries and ultimately create problems.
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
So that is an example where, that we are being deprived of certain foods. And by the way, this is not we think of ourselves as the pinnacle of sophistication and civilization in this country. But in the vast areas of Europe, now there is definitely regulation of food in Europe, big time. But they do allow unpasteurized dairy. That's very, the French would have another revolution if they said you couldn't have raw milk.
Yeah, that's right.
And they're
unpasteurized cheeses.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes,
prevalent. So,
but and they're very concerned about public safety. But do you hear a lot from France about epidemics of listeriosis? I don't hear about that. Because if it's done properly,
I don't hear about that either.
It can be done safely and properly. All right. Anyway, so we'll get off that hobby horse. Let's get off my bully pulpit here, and then we can answer some questions. So, what's coming our way in terms of questions?
We got Dr. Hoffman. I got the other day the mother of a patient of ours, the patient who's a 10-year-old boy. The mother emailed me and said, "My son went to school the other day."
By the way, we want to just say that we don't share details about our patients. So we're going to do this anonymously. But the reason I'm doing this is because I think that letter is very illustrative of something that we're up against. Mm-hmm. And so please share it.
Yeah. So this mother emailed me and said, my son was in class and the teacher was up there using the Food Educate app, and was told about skim milk, getting grading systems on certain food products and food groups. Well, in the category of dairy and of milk in particular, skim milk gets a B, but whole milk gets a D. Mm-hmm. And this was after a consult where we were talking about the importance of fats and dairy fats for a child. So she's, basically throwing up her hands in the air and saying, how do I explain this to my son? These are double messages. And, what do I do? How do I approach the teacher? They've watched the movie Fed Up, as you've recommended, Dr. Hoffman.
Okay.
My
first reaction was see the movie Fed Up, because in that movie they have countless examples of kids who are on, quote, healthier diets and they're fat kids. It's tragic because these kids are fat and they're on healthier diets. So what does a healthier diet mean? It means instead of having Cocoa Puffs, they have whole grain Cheerios for breakfast with skim milk and fruits and lots of whole grain bread instead of Pop-Tarts. They are improving their diet, but the net result is they're not losing weight. And the problem being is that the focus of our food pyramid and of American government policy about diet is to emphasize carbohydrates. And now they're saying, well, whole grains instead of refined grains, and emphasizing that. But that's not going to solve the problem of obesity in this country.
That's true.
That's why I thought this letter was illustrative, because we're up against a climate. You know, and the other thing is, and I posted recently on Facebook and on Twitter, the latest recommendations from the American Heart Association website, which have to do with your proper selection of oils. And so here's what they say. I'm just scrolling down to where I posted that. And here's what they say. This is from the American Heart Association. I'm reading verbatim from this is the most authoritative source of information about how to prevent heart disease. It's, medical professionals and the government and everybody's getting together with the consensus recommendations. Headline: use olive, canola, corn, or safflower oil as your main kitchen fats. And it says, what makes fats so bad? All fats are high in calories. Many fats we eat contain saturated fat. Saturated fat is bad because it raises the bad LDL cholesterol in your blood and can lead to atherosclerosis. And they tell you, saturated fat is usually found in meat and dairy foods. They say
American Heart needs to catch up to the science that you and I read every day put that into action and into use. I mean, this is, at this point, it's ridiculous that nobody is putting that into effect. Them, American Diabetes Association, all of these associations and organizations, they really do need to catch up. And especially, the government MyPlate. It's not the pyramid anymore. The pyramid is gone, but it's MyPlate. But it's still an indicator of the emphasis on starchy carbohydrates like whole grains and less fat and so forth.
And they say to keep arteries healthy, use liquid fats, oils.
Oh no.
The best ones.
That is the supreme cause of inflammation
in
our arteries, as well as so many, such a source of omega-6 fats, which are very pro-inflammatory. And these things can also perpetuate cancer down the road.
Yep.
Many years later.
Absolutely. They're implicated in the deaths of tens of thousands of Americans every year. And they say here the best oils are olive, canola, corn, and safflower oils because they contain the least saturated fat. Well, they don't contain any saturated fat, to my mind, right? But olive oil, we do believe in olive oil because it's a monounsaturated fat.
It also has
beneficial polyphenols in it if it's not too highly refined. Canola oil has the monounsaturated fats, but it's highly refined, so it doesn't have any beneficial polyphenols. Mm-hmm. And it has a lot of omega-6 fats in it. Corn is pure omega-6 fats. Safflower oil, pure omega-6 fats.
Yeah.
And
safflower oil is probably the worst of the bunch, but corn also being genetically modified, and that's
so is canola. So is canola. So is canola. Canola is now
canola. That's right. Yeah. So is canola.
So they do, however, give them credit. They do say hard margarine has drawbacks because it contains trans fat. So they say the best choice for your health is a liquid margarine.
Go get some Crisco. Some liquid Crisco.
Since it's a solid at room temperature, they probably wouldn't recommend that, but they say get a soft margarine in a tub. These are made with less partially hydrogenated fat. I say no, let's ban the stuff. Let's make it illegal, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, and the labeling is deceptive because they're allowed to make a zero trans fat declaration, even if there's some in there, because a serving size is they make ridiculously small. And if it's less than a gram per serving size, and a serving size could be a tablespoon, they're going to make that declaration that it's zero. So anyway, so we just wanted to educate a little bit around that. We really, You know, it's tough because we are surrounded by a bewildering array of health choices, and there's lots of information out there, and some comes from authoritative sources.
Yes.
And you yourself know this because, you know, you went through, a registered dietitian training, and you had to be selective about the information that you were going to adopt. You didn't, you didn't take it all in and spew it out verbatim because some of the information is actually, it's bad science.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this is still, it's bad advice, and there's still fat phobia going on. I think it's going to take a long time to die. And here we are, fighting the good fight.
All right. Yeah. Well, okay. So what's our next question?
Our next question, actually, a comment. This is from Rosemary. Rosemary is on an ultra-low-fat diet secondary to having two stents and then subsequently another angioplasty for another 30% blockage. Anyway,
this is a question for the same theme as the previous comment, right?
Yeah, almost.
Yeah.
She's on the Dean Ornish diet, or even more strict is the Esselstyn diet, the Dr. Esselstyn diet, which is a vegan diet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, both in the scientific research are shown to reverse heart disease or at least stop the progression of coronary artery disease. But you know what, Dr. Hoffman, I remember looking at some of these studies. There was one in particular about the Ornish diet. And even my grad school professor agreed that in very extreme cases where there's over a 90% blockage or a 95% blockage, it will show some regression, but it does not show regression in those blockages of less than 50%,
which
is most of the population.
Uh-huh. That's interesting.
However, Rosemary's biggest complaint is this. She says, I tend to be hungry all the time with this type of eating.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, that is the problem. You see, okay, here we go. If you don't mind me interrupting you, which I always do. But, I just get so excited about this kind of stuff.
I know.
There is actually evidence that the Dean Ornish diet or the even more extreme Caswell Esselstyn diet will regress lesions in the heart. And congratulations to Dean Ornish for doing the work. I think it's commendable. He's actually done the scientific research that shows that people who are on these diets, very, very stringent, almost no fat whatsoever. They eat vegetables and they eat whole grains and they have no animal products whatsoever.
I have to interject here. Wait. Rosemary also says, she says, I will cheat sometimes on some healthy nuts or salmon or sardines. Imagine that
that's
being
a cheat,
Dr.
That's a cheat.
Hoffman.
That's a cheat.
Yes,
yeah. So she feels guilty.
Fat.
Well, so what we're seeing here, though, is while this diet may be successful, a diet is only as successful as we're able to implement it. And under study conditions where somebody signs up for a study and every day you meet with Dean Ornish under his authoritative gaze and his stern countenance, you follow the diet to a T, and at the same time you exercise, you meditate, you're doing all this stuff, you're going to see some improvements. The diet is so restrictive that most people will lose weight, but a diet is only as good as your ability to comply with it. Here we have an example of someone who is attempting to comply with the diet, and she's having a great deal of difficulty because she's hungry all the time. She's thinking about food all the time. That's, you may gain, a couple of years of healthy longevity, but at what cost? You're starving, you're uncomfortable, you're a social pariah because every time you go out, you make a nuisance of yourself because you won't eat anything with anybody. And I mean,
except the pain of a plate of brown rice and
I've entertained
broccoli.
I've entertained people like that. I've attempted to go out to dinner with people like that, and they'll say, bring me the sautéed spinach, but make it steamed. It's like, okay, fine, okay. That's limits things.
Yes, braise it in a little water.
Right, right. And oh my goodness. And so, fat obviously provides people with satiety. We know that certain fats are beneficial, and we should take advantage of that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's the key is fat, because fat is the number one satiety-producing thing. It's not sugar. Sugar, there's no limit to how much you can take, virtually.
That's true.
Okay.
Rosemary, best of luck. I hope she will reconsider, but, all right. Our next question comes from Carolyn. Hello, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Thanks for all that you do to educate your listeners. I really appreciate it. I've been reading The Mediterranean Zone, and I'm considering making my own polyphenol extracts.
Okay.
I'm thinking of using dehydrated apples, blueberries, apple skins, soaking them in alcohol or vodka to obtain an extract.
Hmm.
I make my own vanilla extract at home, but I've only used it for cooking or baking. Barry Spears, PhD, speaks of the health properties of herbs, so I could probably make my own rosemary or thyme extract.
Right, right.
And use
I've had a rosemary martini once.
Ooh.
It was almost, but it tasted very medicinal. <You know? laughs> I didn't really like it that much. But you can get you can have an apple teeny.
Yeah. But that's going to be sweet.
Right. Just a little bit. No, it's got a little bit of apple essence in it and apple flavor. It doesn't necessarily have to have a lot of sugar in it. Her question is this.
Would you recommend against doing this, that is, you know, making fruit or herb extracts at home, to be used to enhance one's health? Well, first of all, if you want to extract the beneficial nutrients of apples and blueberries, why don't you just eat the apples and the blueberries?
Thank you.
Add rosemary to your food. Eat the stuff.
Right. Well, exactly. And you know, here's the thing is that you extract things based on the properties of the solvent, and water is a solvent to some extent, and you can, take apples and maybe chop them up and soak them in water and then drink the water, and you won't get much of the nutrients. You could also take apples and or herbs, and you can soak them in alcohol, and you get some nutrients because alcohol does extract certain things.
Yeah.
But actually, some of the very important nutrients are fat-soluble. So, for example, studies have shown that if you want to cook tomatoes and concentrate the goodness, that it's actually and have it more bioavailable, have it better absorbed, it's good to make olive oil. So, making tomato sauce with olive oil is a good way to enhance the absorption of the lycopene, which is a fat-soluble nutrient. And the same is true for other things like collard greens. Nice to saute them in a little bit of olive oil.
Yep.
What they used to do was they
that ham hock going.
Ham hock, right. And they used lard. They used lard.
Yep.
Jewish people use chicken fat for sauteing things. So,
what's good about lard is that many people don't know, 48 to 49% of lard is monounsaturated.
Right.
Just like olive oil. And beef tallow is about the same.
Yeah, what's interesting, too, about pork lard from pigs that were grown the old-fashioned way is that pigs, like humans, in the sunlight, make vitamin D.
Mm.
And pigs that are grown under modern agricultural circumstances are grown under artificial lights and don't get outside, so they don't make vitamin D. But actually, pork lard was a source of vitamin D for people in the South who raised pigs in enclosures and pens.
Wow.
The old-fashioned way, like free range.
Interesting.
Okay, this is a good point at which to pause, because we generally divide these podcasts into two parts. So let's stipulate this is part one of today's podcast. We have lots of time for more questions. Give us a little teaser towards part two.
What to do about estrogen dominance syndrome?
Estrogen dominance. Is it like a dominatrice, wearing leather with a whip in her hand? Is that
No.
Okay. Well, this is New York, so that's the way we think around here. Okay. So we'll talk about domination and submission around estrogen.
Around estrogen.
Actually, I will point to a really complete discussion of this. I will point people to a podcast that we did last week on that subject was very good on the subject of reproductive health. And you can find that podcast at drhoffman.com. Just scroll down from the top. And we're doing actually several, or we'll do another one this week with Dr. Eden Fromberg on the subject of women's health. And estrogen dominance is a big theme. So we'll talk about that in part two today.
Okay.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Please join us for part two of today's Q&A with Layla. This is Intelligent Medicine.